Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Lincoln's birthday, Wednesday, February 12th, 2014. Are you ready for a Big Brother future?
It doesn't mean much now. It's built for the future. It doesn't mean much now.
That's an 80s band called The Fix. Rocking us into the Peter B. Collins News and Comment today, our lead story, following a day of protests worldwide about the creeping surveillance state in the United States and the illegal actions of the NSA. And I commend everyone who participated. 85,000 calls registered on Capitol Hill from people like you and me. And today, Senator Rand Paul went public. And consider the source. This is a clip from the Fox News Channel. But he announced a class action lawsuit that I fully support. Let's listen to Senator Paul's announcement.
On behalf of myself, FreedomWorks, and everyone in America that has a phone,
he's just pulled out three cell phones.
Against the President of the United States in defense of the Fourth Amendment. We will ask the question in court whether a single warrant can apply to the records of every American phone user all of the time, without limits, without individualization. This, we believe, will be a historic lawsuit. We think it may well be the largest class action lawsuit ever filed on behalf of the Bill of Rights.
Now, I fully support Senator Paul. And as you heard in the clip, he is partnering with FreedomWorks. Now, that is a red flag, a big flare, that this is a political action. It's aimed at President Obama. And while he talks about the rights of Americans and restoring the Fourth Amendment, both of which are very important, the motivation here is at least in part political. And while that raises hackles and little alarm bells with me, because I don't support the broader agenda of Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. But given that no Democrats would launch a similar class action lawsuit, and that it's unlikely that, for example, the Democratic-oriented Center for American Progress would participate and fund a lawsuit like this, we are left with some strange bedfellows. And I will climb into that sack with Rand Paul and any other American who wants to fight to restore the Fourth Amendment. We'll get to some incursions on the First Amendment a little bit later in our report today. So yes, this is a highly political publicity stunt that is aimed at grooming Rand Paul for a presidential run in 2016. And of course, this could be pure folly because the courts have shown great deference to the NSA and to the executive branch on these spying programs. Still, I think adding his voice, bringing in some conservative constituents to the fight to regain our Constitution in this country, is healthy. I just think that lefties like me will continue to be wary of any other alliances with people like Rand Paul. Now to the European Union in Brussels, where we have a cluster of listeners, and hello and bienvenue à vous. Very interesting. The leader of the European Commission's, Commissioner for Digital Affairs, Neelie Kroes, issued a very strong statement today, saying that the internet is far too heavily in the control of the United States, operating under U.S. laws, and it is time to decentralize control of what we call the World Wide Web. And I think that this is a very intelligent, common-sense approach. Now, as you may know, it's a murky outfit called ICANN, which stands for Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. That's where you register a domain name. Well, ICANN is based here in California. it is structured under U.S. and California law. And the commission says recent revelations of large-scale surveillance have called into question the stewardship of the U.S. when it comes to Internet governance. Given the U.S.-centric model of Internet governance currently in place, it is necessary to broker a smooth transition to a more global model while at the same time protecting the underlying values of open multi-stakeholder governance. What does that mean? Don't let the U.S. and its cronies run the whole show. Now, I will add that we need to make sure that we don't just trade the U.S. for a spying nation like France or Germany. Yes, both countries have publicly upbraided the United States for its spying programs, but they conduct heavy surveillance on their own populations. And certainly, Russia would not be a good candidate to trade places with the United States in managing the affairs of the Internet. But Neelie Kroes has some very smart ideas here, and certainly they will gain traction in April when the EU will take its proposals to Brazil. And as you know, in Brazil, the president was just outraged to learn that her personal cell phone was tapped. Her name is Dilma Rousseff. And then it was disclosed that the state oil company Petrobras was a subject of surveillance by the American NSA. There's been no hint that Petrobras has any links to international terrorism, and that, of course, belies the alleged purpose of all of the surveillance that our government conducts. So I may have shocked you by using a clip from Fox News. Now, I have to admit that I was quite shocked to receive on Facebook a link to the clip that I'm about to play for you, because it comes from the cable network that is in the tank for the Obama administration and the Democratic Party. I often refer to it as MSDNC. And some of the current examples? Rachel Maddow has done a great job exposing Chris Christie, the Republican governor of neighboring New Jersey, neighboring to her, but not neighboring to me. And last night again, she devoted half of her show to tedious updates on the investigation of Chris Christie and whether he knew the bridge was being closed under the direction of his top staff members. There are legitimate, newsworthy issues there, but the last two nights, Rachel Maddow has given us teeny bits of new news wrapped in the same story repeated over and over again. The other night it was the question of whether Christie used a helicopter ride from New York back to the Capitol in Trenton to do a flyby of the traffic jam that was created by his staffers on the George Washington Bridge. That's interesting. Last night, the new tidbit was that they are aiming for who helped prep a guy named Bill Baroni, who went to defend the governor before the state legislature, claiming that this was a traffic study, and we now know that is a flat-out lie. So there are advances in the story, and Rachel could easily sum them up in a 5-minute segment. But instead, she just seems to be very obsessed with Chris Christie. And meanwhile, there are important stories that you hear here every day about the NSA, the new disclosures from Greenwald and Scahill. Now, to its credit, MSNBC allowed Chris Hayes to interview Jeremy Scahill about the NSA's involvement in the Obama administration's targeted killing program. That's important news. But it ran way back in the stack of stories on Hayes' show All In, after the obligatory update on the New Jersey scandal. And I'm sorry. You know, Chris Christie is not a national figure. He wants to be. And MSNBC is determined to prevent that. But the bias there is so clear. And when you look at the parade of stories on a nightly basis, MSNBC is the main source for embarrassing news about Republicans. In political circles, we call it opposition research. But that's not news. That doesn't inform the people who tune into MSNBC hoping for some balance of views from the center, slightly left of the Democratic Party. And with that in mind, I was floored when on Facebook a friend linked me up to what you're about to hear from a woman named Crystal Ball. And I confess, I had to look Crystal up. And you might cringe at her name and think, oh, what's her real name? Well, it is her real name. Her dad was a physicist named Ball who studied crystals. So he named his daughter Crystal with a K. She has a very impressive background. Ran for Congress in Virginia and lost. She's a mom, she's an athlete, she's a small business owner, she's got a CPA. And you may recall that when she ran for Congress, they exposed a photograph of her from years before where she was, mugging for a camera, holding up a dildo to her husband's nose. Now, there are far more embarrassing selfies and, porn pictures that are out there. But the way she handled that showed herself to be a strong feminist. And all this is background to share with you the remarkable statement from Crystal Ball saying, "Don't run, Hillary. Don't run." And she opens her commentary by saying that back in 2008, when all my peers were jumping on the Obama bandwagon, I backed Hillary. But as you're about to hear, she doesn't feel that Hillary Clinton is the right candidate for the Democrats in 2016.
In a time when corporations have hijacked our politics, enabling them to reap all the profit without feeling any compunction to do right by their workers, is someone who sat on the rabidly anti-union board of Walmart for 6 years, the right person to restore workers' rights. In a time when we're still reeling from a global financial disaster brought on by foolhardy bank deregulation, is someone who recently took $400,000 to give two speeches at Goldman Sachs the person we need to wrest control of the asylum back from the banking inmates. Someone who at those paid speeches reassured the masters of the universe in attendance that they were being unfairly persecuted. That, in her words, the banker bashing was unproductive and indeed foolish. Someone whose husband, by the way, did much of the deregulating that got us into trouble in the first place. In a time when we badly need to be inspired and rallied and made to believe that America can once again be true to the American dream, we need someone who is mission-driven, who's clearly passionate, living and breathing and feeling in their bones the plight of the worker, of the middle class. That person is not Hillary Clinton. Here's the person that I want.
Now look, you built a factory and it turned into something terrific.
And there she flips to a clip of the new senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, who carries a very populist, pro-worker message. Now, this is stunning. I have never heard of Crystal Clear. I've never seen her. Crystal Ball is her name. Her show is called Crystal Clear. And I'm going to have to look it up and add it to my TiVo recording schedule. And note to Rachel Maddow, watch out. You may be displaced by Crystal, who, despite the play on her name, is very clear there about where she stands. And I was shocked that MSDNC would permit her to say this on their network. So I find it very refreshing, and of course I fully agree with her. Now, her critique of Hillary is limited to domestic issues, and that's her prerogative. My critique is expanded to include her hawkish duty as Secretary of State. Now, in some respects, you have to blame the chief executive for the agenda that a Secretary of State carries out. But from what we learn from Robert Gates' book, maybe you've heard the conversation I had with Mel Goodman, critiquing that book sharply. But one of the themes that runs through Secretary Gates' book is how often he and Hillary were the only smart people in the room. And they were up against, at various times, Joe Biden or some of the military leaders, some of the humanitarian hawks from Hillary's camp, Samantha Power and Susan Rice. And so I really welcome this discussion. I do not feel comfortable at all in just saying, oh, yeah, it's Hillary's turn, you know, dynasty politics, Bush, Clinton, we had a little Obama intervention there in the meantime. And to be fair, the Obama administration has been years 9 through 16 of the first Clinton administration. So, Crystal Ball, you've got a new fan, and I will be watching. And I want to thank the people who are fans of this podcast, who support us with their subscriptions. We've got a new annual subscriber from Vancouver, Washington. Alexandra Marin signed up a week or so ago. Thank you, Alex. Also, Jeffrey Zeiser, Gary Washington, and Janet Price are long-term monthly subscribers to this podcast, and I hope you'll join them. Go to my website, peterbcollins.com. Look under my picture on the homepage, and you'll see the link that says Sign Up Now. Follow that, and you can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget. The best deal is our $50 annual subscription. And when you sign up for a new annual subscription and you're from the continental United States, we will send you our bonus gift, a copy of the rock and roll music CD by John Dist called Red Flag, a lot of politically potent tunes in there, and some highly potent kick-ass coffee beans from the Big Island of Hawaii, supplied by our friend Russ Archibald. That's all yours if you're a new annual subscriber. And here's another way you can help us, whether you subscribe or not. Take our offer for a free 30-day trial from audible.com. Audible will reward you with your first free audiobook download, absolutely free. They have over 150,000 titles, last time I checked. And whether you stay with them or not, you can end the subscription before 30 days, and you won't owe Audible a penny. And if you stay with them, that's fine. Either way, they're going to send me $15 because you tried out their service at my request. So click on over there, will you? It just takes a few minutes, and I would appreciate your support in that way. There is this curious debate that has gone public in Washington. And overall, it's one that I welcome, but it is still curious. We talked about this on Monday, and new information has surfaced about the Obama administration's desire to use a drone strike to kill an American citizen who lives in Pakistan, who they say is an active member of Al-Qaeda and is actively plotting terrorist attacks against U.S. targets. Now, this is a completely trust-me story. We don't know the guy's name, although he's probably figured out from the coverage of the last few days who he is and why he's being targeted. And this relates to conflict between the Republican hawks, who think Obama should conduct drone strikes at will, and the conflict that Obama himself set in motion last spring when he gave a speech in May saying that he wanted to kind of revise the drone program and house it entirely at the Pentagon, not the CIA. And I can't exactly evaluate that because it's all secret whether it's CIA or Pentagon, and so the difference in many ways is not that significant to a guy like me. But Mike Rogers, the former FBI agent who chairs the Republican-controlled House Intelligence Committee, he was griping last week that red tape caused by the Obama administration is putting Americans at risk. And this, of course, is one of those scurrilous remarks. He said, individuals who would have been previously removed from the battlefield by U.S. counterterrorism operations for attacking or plotting to attack against U.S. interests remain free because of self-imposed red tape. Some of that red tape relates to the sovereignty of the nation of Pakistan. Some of that red tape relates to the unilateral extension of presidential power, and in my view, he lacks the authority to target an American citizen for killing, even overseas, even if they're knee-deep in terrorist activities against the United States, without some form of judicial process. It's guaranteed in the Fifth Amendment. Neither life nor liberty shall be taken without due process. But why have they permitted this debate to surface publicly? It wasn't leaked by Chelsea Manning, Ed Snowden, Or even that guy Kim, the Pentagon contractor, or maybe it was State Department, who pled guilty last week to leaking information to Fox News about North Korea. No, this is a White House-sanctioned leak. And that's what raises questions, and you have to say, why are they going public with this? Why didn't they just kill him like they did everybody else and tell us about it? I don't condone that. I'm just saying that's been the MO until recently. And so this departure simply is curious in that respect. I want to thank the people at the Center for Constitutional Rights because they fight for our constitutional rights, sometimes by representing the most unpopular people in our country or those being maligned by our country, you know, like the men held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Well, we covered this issue back in December, that a group of academics passed a resolution imposing a boycott on certain contacts with Israeli universities. And it is the American academics' position that Israel is an extremist-controlled, brutal regime that routinely violates the rights of Palestinians and other non-Jews both in and outside of Israel. As you know, I fully support their resolution. But there is a move in Congress to pass a bill called H.R. 4009. And I've only learned about it because CCR, Center for Constitutional Rights, is circulating a letter in opposition to H.R. 4009, drafted to shield Israel from boycotts and to, quote, fight back against college campus campaigns critical of Israeli policies. And this is a clear violation of the First Amendment rights of the academics and of other American groups, and to deny federal funding to institutions of higher learning based on the political viewpoints of scholars at that institution is a gross overreaction that is not only unconstitutional, it's un-American and deeply misguided. So I invite you to look up on the internets this H.R. 4009 and contact your member of Congress and express your opposition and your outrage over this bill. The Senate has cleared the procedural hurdle, and I want to mention that the southeast United States has been hammered by a snow and ice storm. It's now moving north along the eastern seaboard, picking up steam, picking up water, and even as I'm speaking, I believe that it is going to shut down Washington, D.C. So on Wednesday, the Republican leaders in the Senate held their noses and kind of plugged their ears as Ted Cruz failed to mount a filibuster against a measure to match the House action from yesterday, increase the debt ceiling until March 15th of next year. But Ted Cruz, like other Tea Party extremists, want to try to extort cuts to programs, things that they think will reduce the deficit, or any other move that would pander to the extreme Tea Party elements in this country. And it's refreshing to see that the cloture vote to end debate and avoid a filibuster was 67 to 31. Now, they probably won't get 67 votes for the underlying bill, but it's clear there's a majority to pass it, and that's just another bit of brinksmanship that has been dodged, and it does show deep fracturing in the Republican Party and their representatives in Washington, which, is only good news, in my opinion. I wanted to share this item that came from Press TV, and it's a day or two old. A senior Iraqi commander says that weapons seized from alleged al-Qaeda-linked militants in Iraq are advanced Israeli-made arms, and that this is not a recent development. The source is Fadel Jamil al-Barwari, the commander of the Golden Battalion. He says that all arms that have been confiscated from the so-called rebels in Iraq since 2006 are Israeli-made. Now, the fact that they're made in Israel doesn't mean that they were necessarily supplied by Israel. And I'm offering this for your study and review. I don't have an indictment against Israel at this point. But as I've told you before, I'm very uncomfortable with the sloppy and lazy way that various groups of insurgents or rebels are tagged with the Al-Qaeda label. Whether or not it's meaningful, you know, we hear Al-Qaeda linked or Al-Qaeda related or Al-Qaeda sympathizers. But it creates a very false picture for Americans about the nature of Al-Qaeda and the myth of its central control system. It's just a bunch of people with a common interest. I don't believe that Ayman al-Zawahiri sends orders from wherever he is out to the people in the field. While he did recently a kind of deflag or defrock one group in Syria, there is very little central control of Al-Qaeda's sprawling supporters. So we have this conflict between Sunni and Shia in Iraq. The U.S. is siding with the majority Sunnis. The Shias, of course, were the minority that brutally ruled Iraq under Saddam Hussein. And many scores are being settled. Meanwhile, Fallujah is once again a battleground, and once again, U.S. drones and missiles are being flung at Fallujah and the Anbar province. And it's a very strange set of figures there and in Syria, as we've been discussing for a long time now. Here in uber-liberal San Francisco, a federal judge who's been on the bench for 15 years, William Alsup, is hearing a case from the National Rifle Association challenging a San Francisco ban on high-capacity gun magazines. NRA says, you know, it's Second Amendment, it's absolute, you can't limit gun magazines, that is an unfair infringement on the right to have a weapon. Well, Judge Alsup says that in his 15 years on the bench, he's seen precious few cases where a homeowner has warded off an intruder with 10 or more bullets, but many cases in which criminals wielded large-capacity weapons. Quote, "You have zero evidence that these oversized magazines are used for common self-defense." That was a quip to the NRA attorney, Anna Barvier. She replied that at least 75 million gun magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, which San Francisco would outlaw, have been sold in the United States, and that she claims that they're covered by the Supreme Court ruling in 2008 that struck down the handgun ban in Washington, D.C. There's a big difference, NRA. A big difference. We'll follow this one. NRA, of course, takes no prisoners. They'll fight it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Kudos to the governor of Washington State, Jay Inslee, a former Democratic congressman. I've met him a couple of times. I think he's a bright man. He has suspended the use of the death penalty for the remainder of his term, which is up through 2016. During my term, we will not be executing people. Well, good move. Nice to see Washington is becoming such a hotbed of progressive, dare we say, liberal policies, and I'm very glad to see it. I also want to commend the senator from New York. No, not Chuck Schumer. Kirsten Gillibrand, the junior senator, who continues her fight against the rampant sex crime crisis in the U.S. military. Now, she lost an internal struggle to Carl Levin and Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri last year, when the stronger Gillibrand legislation, which would have taken prosecutions for sex crimes out of the military chain of command and appointed independent prosecutors to handle it, well, she lost that struggle, but she hasn't given up. She is now demanding that the Pentagon release all reports and allegations of rape, forcible sodomy, sexual assault, sex in the barracks, adultery, and attempts, conspiracies, or solicitations to commit these crimes during the last 5 years. Why? You wouldn't be shocked to learn that the Pentagon has been concealing information, holding back information, giving partial information, doing everything it can to stonewall the data that would drive important policy reforms. You go, Kirsten Gillibrand, you go, and don't stop. Not a surprise that Ray Nagin, the former mayor of New Orleans, has been found guilty of accepting payoffs for city contracts, becoming the first mayor in the city's history to be charged and convicted of corruption. That's the surprise part. He was convicted. After all, the stories of corruption in Louisiana date back a century. We had Edwin Edwards, the guy who liked to gamble, got caught up in a bribery scene with Eddie DeBartolo, who used to run the San Francisco 49ers football team, and DeBartolo showed up with a suitcase with $400,000 in cash. That's kind of business as usual in New Orleans. And Nagin offered a pretty spirited but, in the end, unconvincing defense. And looks like he'll do some hard time for corruption in his role after Katrina in running the city of New Orleans. Eric Holder has surfaced with another good idea. And I, as you know, I'm not a fan of Eric Holder, but when he does the right thing, I have no problem saying so. He says that America's states should repeal laws that restrict for life the voting rights of former felons, because the laws prevent former prison inmates from reentering society successfully. He gave a speech at Georgetown University Law School, and this is one point where the Attorney General and I are in full agreement. Yesterday, we learned that Shirley Temple Black, who was a child star and whose roles as a child movie star were part of my upbringing, she passed away at the age of 85. And she's an interesting woman. Back in 1967, she surfaced as a Republican candidate for Congress backed by the Nixon White House because she supported the war in Vietnam. And her opponent, my longtime friend Pete McCloskey, who held that congressional seat as a moderate Republican, who challenged Nixon on the war, and who actually ran for president in some of the early primaries to challenge Nixon over the Vietnam War, well, McCloskey defeated Shirley Temple Black in her only run for public office. But Nixon rewarded her by making her a member of the U.S. Delegation to the United Nations. Then Gerald Ford named her ambassador to Ghana. And under George H.W. Bush, she served as ambassador to what was then called Czechoslovakia. And in those roles, she was generally acting. She's quoted as saying that, yeah, you know, acting and politics, they're really a lot, they have a lot in common. And so, Shirley Temple Black, gone at the age of 85. And one more obit today, Sid Caesar, who was one of my father's favorite comedians, along with Jonathan Winters, has died. He was born in 1922, so he was 92 years old. And he was best known as a Borscht Belt comic who survived the Catskills, went on to host the television program Your Show of Shows and Caesar's Hour. And he was a very interesting man, quite a smart guy for a comic of that ilk in that era. And I just want to acknowledge his passing. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. You're personally authorized to share this podcast with absolutely anyone. And I hope you will. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until